He's in Virginia or something.
Good afternoon, and let's welcome to our July 18th meeting of the Stormwater Utility Commission. Let's have a call to order. Roll call. Yes, let's do a roll call.
Chair DeSantis?
Here.
Vice Chair Brown?
Here.
Commissioner Hawkinson?
There's no one on.
He may call in on the phone. Commissioner Pufari?
Present.
Commissioner Stinnett? Let the record show we have a quorum.
Did we know Commissioner Stinnett was not going to be here?
I don't believe so.
Okay. He may be coming late then. Call to the audience. All right. No call to the audience. Council member liaison reports comment. Council member liaison is excused for today, so we won't have that. The first item on the regular session agenda is review and approval of the June 20th, 2019 meeting minutes.
Chair DeSantis, with no objection, I would like to make a motion to approve the minutes.
That was Commissioner Kafari. Commissioner Brown just seconded.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's unanimous. The next item, number two, is presentation and discussion regarding ongoing collaborative efforts between the Town of Oro Valley and the Regional Flood Control District by Eric Shep and Greg Sachs.
That's me, and that's Greg Sachs, and also Brian Jones.
Hello, Brian.
We have a few items listed that was requested of us, and they're going to take a piece of that. But based on the list that I have, item number one is budget overview. So July 2nd, our Board of Supervisors, the Flood Control District Board of Directors voted for our budget as proposed after a little bit of a whirlwind with respect to, there was a motion by a supervisor to try to create a tax revenue neutral budget, and one of the items for discussion was whether or not that could be done essentially on the back of the Flood Control District. So for a while there was a risk for an $8 million cut to our capital budget, but in the end, all five supervisors voted for our budget as proposed based on the tax levy that results in a revenue for the Flood Control District of about $24 million, of which about $16 million is in our operating budget. The remainder goes to our capital program. And I handed out a capital budget. Is that in everybody's packet? Yeah. That is it right there. So, this is our capital program for fiscal year 19-20. I don't need, unless you're interested, to exhaustively go through those. The ones of relevance to you would be, at the request of the Town of Oro Valley, we have earmarked a project for Catalina Ridge drainage channel improvements, which relies on a grant that Oro Valley is pursuing. We would be the match to the grant, and we would be the grant managers for that. So that's why that shows up. Both the grant and our match show up in our budget. There are other, we work in all jurisdictions, so we have projects in all jurisdictions. We do have a few projects which Oro Valley might, be the beneficiary of, because we don't know where floods happen. We do have both an urban drainage fund. Should there be flooding that occurs and maintenance net needs or capital needs need to occur in urban areas or along the major water courses, you'll notice we have a major water course infrastructure management fund. Those are earmarked. They don't have a specific location, but it's a planning tool such that during the monsoon or during the winter storms, if we have large flood events, we can respond quickly with dollars without having to go back to our Board of Supervisors to begin doing maintenance opportunities. again, unless there are questions, I don't know. I'll leave it up to you about whether or not I need to want to exhaustively go through this list.
No, I think you're doing just fine.
Okay. There's always opportunity. I don't think we use it that often in Oro Valley, but we have a flood-prone land acquisition program. It's an award-winning program. It's been around since the 1983 flood, whereby we, acquire flooded properties, remove the improvements, and restore those areas back to flooding. Ideally, those are for structures that were constructed prior to the onset of, real floodplain management regulations before the flood insurance rate maps. So they're built in a location without the benefit of design or accommodation for flooding. So over time, as those flood, we're opportunistic to, acquire those and remove those from the tax rolls so that we don't have future flood risk.
So these are actually response. Like this is someone's home. It could be somebody's home.
It is frequently somebody's home. We also purchase open space land so that, we know that if you start developing an upper watershed, that increases flood peaks and reduces flood peak times. And so by leaving some of those areas natural, that keeps the flood situation downstream that folks are relying on in a good place. As a matter of fact, one of the big purchases originally was the Cienega Creek Corridor, tributary to the Pantano Wash. A lot of those lands were purchased in order to remove the threat of the development and the further flooding of Tucson in this particular case. Mm-hmm. For you, we removed probably 70 structures in the Cañada del Oro Wash up in the town of Catalina after the Aspen fires. There was significant flooding even for small storm events, and we acquired about 70 structures and restored that whole floodplain. So that's flood attenuation, which water that doesn't make it to Oro Valley and threaten the levees in Oro Valley. Yeah, it became Catalina Regional Park.
Chairman, I have a question. Is that reflected in a line item? Are we looking at...
I'll stand up here. So this is the flood-prone land acquisition program. We earmark about $1 million a year for that. And we acquire various amounts. Again, it's open space. It's older structures. It's flood-prone structures. There's no specific properties, at the time of budgeting. It's a volunteer program. We don't condemn property. It's folks who are willing to sell very frequently after big flood. If they get damaged, they're willing to sell because then otherwise they fear every rain. And so there's some opportunism associated with that. There are areas where we already have some consolidation of parcels that we want to further, create a cohesive thing that can be used for park purposes or other multi-use purposes. We'll get a donation. That's true.
In kind from a property owner?
Yeah, so a property owner, acquires something on the tax roll, they might have their own interest, or they're realizing they have property that they can't otherwise sell, and they're paying taxes on it, and they can write it off as a donation.
So the highest dollar item is that, is the CDO wash from Thornydale to I-10?
Correct.
3.1?
Yeah, so that is a project with a private entity. There is a portion of the CDO wash from Thornydale to I-10. That is privately owned. There's a developer who will build bank protection along a portion of that. There are remaining portions that are owned by us underneath the railroad and I-10 that we're responsible for. And so this is a project where we're kind of teaming up together, where he pays for his portion and we pay for our portion because when you build bank protection, you want to make sure you're connecting to existing bank protection. You're tying in. So you have one long corridor. And so that $3.1 million, it's actually only $1.5 million of tax levy and $1.6 million of the developer's money,
great,
which is kind of similar to the one above it is Catalina Drainage. It's a mostly grant.
So the developer will just write you a check, and
correct,
you'll do the work.
Correct. He wants us to manage the project. We have a development agreement, which kind of stipulates everybody's responsibilities.
Okay. And Oro Valley has been the beneficiary of something similar to that in the past?
Yes. So, the bank protection that's all along the Cañada del Oro was built by the Flood Control District. You were a beneficiary many, many years ago. So we don't have that many big projects in Oro Valley because Oro Valley got front-loaded with those kind of projects kind of early on. The few projects, new bank protection that's being constructed are developer-financed. Nakoma Sky was one. There's some stuff up on Honeybee. So those are being built by a developer, and then we'll accept them into our system for operation and maintenance. We'll be the owners of them in the end.
Any other questions about the finances? Not? Thank you.
Sure. So the next item that was requested was an update on our floodplain management plan, which will be Greg, who'll be doing the talking. I think
so
that's this.
So many of you are involved and aware that the district is a NFIP community rating system, participating community, and we've had various types of floodplain management plans in place, but never one that followed the CRS guidelines sufficiently to achieve a class 4 rating. Had a plan in place, which was the county multi-hazard mitigation plan. We got our floodplain management plan points out of that, and our watershed management plan points out of the retention detention manual. So now this will kind of combine all that, be a board-approved plan, and hopefully you can get it. But so the process has been ongoing for a few months. We have a planning committee made up of stakeholders that's all about to have its third meeting on Monday. We've been doing informational meetings with homeowners associations and other neighborhood groups who invite us, which this is sort of one of those meetings. And of course, we're also reporting to the Flexible District Advisory Committee. And of course, many of you know Joseph Murray works for us. We just sent out a brochure to all the floodplain residents in unincorporated in the county that looked like this. Normally, we do an annual mailer under CRS to floodplain property owners. This year, we did it to residents because we're trying to promote them filling out our survey as opposed to concentrating on selling flood insurance to the owner. Also, we identified a gap in the program for public information that Joseph works on to say that, strangely enough, in our CRS, I don't know what your insurance data looks like, but there are no properties with only contents policies. So that implies that there's no renters
getting
flood insurance, whether they be a business or an individual. So that's kind of where the outreach phase of the plan. The next couple of months we'll be doing problem assessments. I forget, Joseph, if you also have in your package the watershed fact sheet we did for the Cañada del Oro.
Not for the CDO specifically.
I can pass those around. I brought copies, but this is kind of the generic fact sheet for the whole project. And then at this point, we've started presenting, or will be presenting on Monday, to the planning committee these fact sheets. And, you know, we have a project webpage, and there's fact sheets and additional problem assessment being developed for each watershed in the unincorporated area of the county. And then we'll be working on setting goals with the committee over the next couple months and publishing an actual draft plan to the website, which we would then have real public hearings prior to the Board of Supervisors consideration. And we'll be working with the advisors.
At that stage, is it fairly complete? Is it like you're having charrettes, or is it just a completed plan that you're rolling out and they'll comment on it for?
Well, it's not a design plan, so
yeah.
As a planner, I love the word charrette.
Okay.
We have been having these monthly working sessions where any stakeholder who wants to or individual can come in and access our senior staff and our full GIS. So those have kind of been like charrettes, and that people
yes.
come in and we pull up the maps and talk about their specific issues. In the plan itself, it's not really a design plan. You know, we won't identify needed capital projects. We might say that a watershed needs capital improvements, but we're not going to, you know, identify a stretch of bank protection or a new bridge in this plan. That's more of a basin study kind of a level effort. So, but there will be a draft plan
May I speak?
Yes, go ahead. Justin, Mr. Wilson.
Yeah. Is there any, does your plan include Oral Valley? We are Pima County residents. Does your plan include?
Well, in fact, we've been having an interesting discussion as I was putting together these fact sheets. You know, a lot of people said it should only include data for unincorporated area. And, you know, some of us argued that, well, we collect taxes in the unincorporated area and the water flows from the unincorporated area, so the analysis applies to it. But then the whole purpose of the plan is to identify what activities we undertake as a CRS community. So, of course, regulatory would only apply in unincorporated areas and so forth. So it'll concentrate on unincorporated areas, but we will probably need to report what activities we have going on in the jurisdictions.
But wouldn't that also apply to watershed needs? You're not coming up with a CIP budget, but you're going to say this watershed...
It's got to be on a watershed basis.
It needs something, X, Y, Z, and it could be Moran, it could be South Tucson, it could be something.
So,
and is that, so is that a yes or a no?
Well, it's a yes in terms of we identify the problems and review which activities we're responsible for that are appropriate to address those problems. But you know, we may not be the only jurisdiction or owner of authority to do something about the problem. So obviously, in certain areas, it's the jurisdiction we would need to partner with. In other areas, it's private property owners.
So for example, and it's a great question, and it really highlights you know, where we are relative to the other jurisdictions, because certainly we're regional in some elements, you know, capital programming, et cetera, but not necessarily in floodplain management. So if one of the recommendation was employ non-structural floodplain management techniques like bigger erosion hazard setbacks or avoidance of the floodplain, it wouldn't apply in Oro Valley. It's our board that's going to, you know, adopt this, and it won't compel your town council from doing anything. So, but it really highlights, you know, where the overlaps are and perhaps where the gaps might be on how that occurs, because you're right. I mean, the water courses and the watersheds don't cross or do cross political boundaries. However, you know, by the general nature of a floodplain management plan, there's floodplain management issues will come out of that for mm-hmm. which only unincorporated Pima County can handle in unincorporated Pima County. And it's possible, as we learned through this, that if you guys, you know, wanted to dive in, you're a CRS community, there might be some ways to, maybe in the next iteration, this is also not going to be done, put on a shelf. You know, we have to go through iterations over time where we can add other jurisdictions. City of Tucson just went through a floodplain management plan process on their own. So I think that's what drove us to starting off. Let's just focus on the floodplain management side, the regulatory side, for which you know we're the sole keeper in unincorporated Pima County. But we keep bumping into this same issue of if you look at our capital projects, you know, see the previous slide, they're in all the jurisdictions. And so there will be some recommendations that you know would cross borders, but you know we're seeking direction on how, on a watershed basis, we might treat things. Generally speaking, you know, the Tancredi Valley, or are we going to start, you know, bank protecting the Tancredi Valley, or leave it in an open, you know, a natural area? The you know, Brawley Wash, is it relatively, you know, sparsely populated, and you know, so back to those kind of areas, as opposed to, you know, meddling in those decisions in other jurisdictions. We're not doing that.
Mr. Turner,
is there anything the town of Oro Valley can help you with? You say you're now in the process of gathering information concerning watershed issues.
Yeah.
Is there information that we might know?
Absolutely. I think Greg alluded to is, you know, the overall compelling task for us during this plan is engage stakeholders. We ask different questions at different times. And the first one would be, what are the hazards? We know what a bunch of hazards are, but we don't know all the hazards. And so we ask everybody, are there hazards that you know of that we don't know about? And we gather all the hazards. And then we'll come back, okay, with all of these hazards, who's really exposed to those hazards? You know, we might have high hazard areas that nobody lives in. Is that really a priority? Perhaps not. And so we'll ask that question. And then how do we handle
these problems. So we're going to kind of be circular here, and I think at any or all of those input from Oro Valley would be appreciated.
And to add to that, CRS is very particular with things they want you to do, so they would like us to talk to our neighboring, all neighboring communities, mm-hmm. and ask those three questions. So I don't know if that's appropriate for the Stormwater Commission or group or person from the town, but in a way, at this phase, I would like to schedule an individual, whether it's one-on-one or walk with someone kind of from the town or the Stormwater Authority to talk through those questions.
Chairman, question, would that be sort of meeting some of the criteria of the summer 2019 conduct meetings for the public to comment?
No, that would be, those are actual public
meetings. Yeah, public meetings.
This is meeting with individual neighboring communities.
No.
I don't think it really means council, it means like a person.
Does this meet that criteria? Does this constitute that?
It does, except that I'm sort of going to formally ask those questions.
I would have thought maybe that would have happened.
Yeah, and the avenue that happens, we'll ask Oro Valley, how do you want that to occur? Should it occur here? It could be a future meeting. It could be at staff, and then what we come up with can come. But we would ask you. I think we're happy to do it anyway.
Okay. Chair DeSantis, I would like to make a statement that there is a community survey that Greg has developed. It's included in the packet. It has 10 quick questions on it, and it helps the county gauge kind of this process and kind of what hazards are specific to you as the individual, and not just as a general Oro Valley community, but you as the individual. So I would urge everyone to take a look at that as they have time.
Interesting that some of these questions don't say none, or none of the above, or does not apply, or so you won't know.
We can skip that.
It's also been noted by one of our frequent applicants that it's not a satisfaction survey.
No, but from that standpoint, you wouldn't know if somebody just skipped it or somebody didn't have an answer.
Okay.
But. Wow, you go up to I. That's a lot of choices. All right. Thank you.
We've actually been getting a pretty good response to it so far, so we've been a little surprised at what level of response we've gotten.
That's great. What's next?
All right, what's next is little discussion about adding alert gauges in the town of Oro Valley. There was a request, excellent. So additional rainfall gauge information, we operate a network of over 100 rain and stream gauges that help identify the threat of flooding. I suppose somewhere in here we're going to talk about.
I can stop you for a second.
Yeah, sure.
Are the green ones where you are potential, or are the circled ones potential, and the green ones actual current ones?
Right. So the green, the legend got cut off. The the green ones, I believe, are secure Oro Valley water facilities. So that was information. Sent to us. So, one hurdle that we have is we'd like to create secure sites, so that reduces our maintenance costs. Otherwise, everything that's up there is something that's shootable. And so having a secure sites is important to us. And so Oro Valley gave us the information of potential secure location. Then our circled ones are ones that fit into our rainfall network that would be beneficial just to us regionally as well as specifically to Oro Valley. And so there are four circled here. Two of them are in the Highlands Wash. One's coming out of the Push Ridge area, and the one farther south there. And so we have funding identified for two of those that could happen in a fairly short time frame. And so we've really just begun a conversation. This is just our response back fairly recently, mm-hmm. to figure out. I think our preference is
this northern one, because this is, you know, near Highlands Wash, but also Big Wash, Honeybee Wash, so that will help inform the rainfall there, and then one of those two. So that's, we're just having that conversation. So, but those, you know, we have dollars earmarked for adding those rain gauges this fiscal year.
About how much is each gauge?
Yes.
Including not just the gauge, but I guess the monitor.
Yeah, all the equipment. I think it runs to the tune of about $8,000 to $10,000, something along those lines. But then, you know, then it's part of the network, and so then it's maintenance. And so, you know, we're out there, you know, once or twice a year after large events. And, so the capital cost isn't huge. We're expanding at a pretty good rate, and we want to do it thoughtfully so it adds value to the overall picture, both inside a watershed and then regionally. And then we use that data and weather service data to try to figure out, you know, should a big flood happen. You know, it becomes a forensic exercise of, you know, hey, we know we had a flood, and we have these gauges that help with rainfall on the ground, and then we use the radar data to try to figure out what the overall volume of water that came out of the sky in that watershed. So we work hand in glove with the water
service. Chairman's question. So they're co-located with our existing infrastructure, or valley, either surface water quality monitoring, which I suppose...
That's the plan. I don't know if they're well sites or pressure, you know, infrastructure that I think you already have fenced off. Our footprint is tiny. It's a stand that's like this big with the tipping bucket on top, so it doesn't take up a lot of room. And so I think that, you know, the idea of being able to co-locate that, that's the best bang for the buck.
Chair DeSantis, sorry to interrupt. If you guys are interested in seeing one, there is one at La Cholla and Tangerine, just right up the road here, about 2 miles. It's on the southwest corner of that intersection, southeast corner of that intersection, so you guys can see it in person yourself.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I think these are the existing ones. That's a stream gauge. That's probably right. I think red was one that already
red's existing.
Yeah.
There's one at 680 as well.
Yeah, we have one at our office.
Yeah, okay. Well,
so that would be La Cholla and Moore.
Yes, La Cholla and Moore. You're correct.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Sorry, I'm Mr. Turner.
Eric, we were at your office this last week,
mm-hmm.
and we were given the privilege of going into your alert gauge
mm-hmm.
headquarters. It was a spacious office with computer monitors and all manner of computer gear, a massive screen, and the operator, I'm forgetting his name.
Lynn Orchard,
a bright young man, showed us a radar image of a previous storm the prior week.
And
he said that there's a, down in the Santa Rita Mountains or at the Empire Mountains, there's a radar, weather radar facility. And he said that the radar information is sufficient for the Weather Service to determine how much rain is falling in that pixel or whatever that computational area during a storm, and the total rainfall, or, you know, by minute. And he said that there's a cooperative agreement between the Flood Control District and the National Weather Service, who has those radar gauges, to use the real time information from the alert gauges to adjust those radar findings on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
So they're adjusted every moment. We know how much radon fell. We know if the radar said it should have, and those if they tweak it. And it just speaks to the cooperation between agencies, your agency and the National Weather Service, and the town of Oro Valley is looking forward to helping more with that.
Yeah.
And it's just an exciting program that you've developed. And I think you're doing more with your alert system, and I think you have more to talk about that today.
That's right.
Yes, but thank you
great
so much.
Thanks for the compliment and great segue. So I think the inundation mapping is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right,
Jeff. Tied into our alert system. So we've now actually come up with a new way to use our alert gauges. The Pima County Office of Emergency Management fairly recently implemented what they call, it's the software called Everbridge, and they're calling it the My Alert system. And what the My Alert system is, Everbridge can do a lot of things, but the public-facing side of it is what they're calling My Alerts. And it's basically it's an opt-in emergency alert tool that OEM can use. And so people have to go in and sign up and sign in. It's not something that gets pushed out like an Amber Alert or a Silver Alert or the National Weather Service alerts. It's something you have to opt into so people can sign in. And then individuals can put up to 5 different locations that they're interested in into the system. And then if something happens that impacts that area, basically the system, the Everbridge system will push out alerts to the people who indicated they're interested in something that happens in that area.
What is a location? Is it a street
address? It could be your house. It could be your work. It could be your children's school.
But they're putting in a physical address.
A physical address.
A postal address.
Yes, an address.
Okay.
So like I said, you can put in up to 5 locations. So you can put in your parents' house, your children's school, or whatever, any place you want to be alerted if there's, and then it's an all hazards thing. So it could be a bomb threat. It could be a severe storm, it can be a flood, anything that spatially kind of has a spatial component to it. And it will notify you. You basically can provide it the options of how you want it to notify you. So it can be via text, it can be via email, it can be via phone call. And so you input all that into the system. And what we realized is with our alert gauges, primarily our stream flow gauges, we're not really advanced enough about rainfall yet, but I'll touch base on that. There are certain watersheds where we have sufficient floodplain information and sufficient gauging, stream gauges, to provide a certain amount of flood warning to individuals who are within the floodplains of those watersheds. So we're currently rolling this out on 10 different gauging sites. 3 of them are on Tankaverde Creek, so upper, middle, and lower. Ventana Canyon, Pima Canyon, Franco Wash on the southwest side, upper Santa Cruz, Cañada del Oro within the county. What else am I missing?
Pima?
I think that Pima. Yeah, Pima is the other one. And so basically, we have inundation levels of different size of flood events. So it's not just a 100-year flood. I'll take Tankaverde Creek as an example for the upper Tankaverde. We know, because we've had enough flood events on Tankaverde Creek, that we know that at roughly 12,000 CFS, Tankaverde comes out of the channel and then starts to come over bank and starts to impact people. And so we know these different inundation levels, and so what we've done is we've created polygons associated with different discharges of flood as they move out from the channel. And we put these polygons into the Everbridge system, and then when a flood happens on that watershed, our alert system kicks in and says, hey, the gauge at Tankaverde Guest Ranch says that the flow is at 12,000 CFS. So Lynn Orchard, the guy who manages our alert system, he can then call up Pima County Office of Emergency Management and say, the gauge at Tankaverde Guest Ranch just hit 12,000. We're going to send a message to that area, that inundation area. We have messages pre-programmed into Everbridge. So all he has to do is say, send message for gauge 1293, and it's this inundation level, and then OEM just has to push a couple of buttons, and anybody who's within that polygon, who's had an address in the MyAlert system that's within that polygon, will get a message from Everbridge system by the means of their choice, again, whether it's text, email, or phone call.
Not to interrupt, but I think your packet has a kind of an example of the different.
I think that's the Cañada del Oro is the example that's in the packet.
Just to give an idea.
What's it? Yep. So this is an example. So here in this case of the Cañada del Oro, This is actually an older version of the map. There's a newer one. We have discharge values of 875 CFS, 5,200 CFS, and 17,500 CFS. The 17,500 is basically the 100-year. So in pretty much almost every case, we have a 100-year, and then we have values that are down from that. And it's not necessarily a 25-year event or a 50-year event. We try to, our goal is to get these lower threshold discharge values at something that's meaningful in terms of flood response. So, the 5-year may not be an important value because it's still in the channel. Maybe it's the 27-year that's really important because that's when homes start to flood. Basically, we've chosen the watershed that we're doing this on based on our availability of these kind of different inundation levels, so our level of knowledge, and then also, of course, it has to be paired with a place where we have a stream gauge. Yes.
So what is the lead time between a trigger from a gauge to a person who interprets it, to that person making the phone call, to the person typing it in? I mean, because the trigger mechanism, if it floods at 12,000, that means that it's already flooding before the trigger takes place, or at the moment the trigger takes place, well before people are notified. So people say, no kidding, I mean, it's flooding.
You've nailed it, we haven't done this in the however 40 years.
So one of our early attempts at this is pre-Everbridge. We actually had a flood on Tankbury Creek, where we were trying to use the reverse 911 system to notify people. And we've discovered through that example and through doing this, that the 911 data is not very good. There is potentially like 20-25% bad data in the 911 data. And when we tried this, I can't remember what year, was it 2010, I think?
You're talking about the location data.
Yes, so phone data, essentially. So we tried pushing a so we had an event on Tank Verde Creek. We tried sending out reverse 911 phone calls to the folks who we thought were going to be impacted.
And their cell phone is someone else.
And they weren't getting the call, but it needed to go through the phone company. Mm-hmm. So we were telling OEM. OEM was telling whoever they needed to tell. By the time the phone company got the message, they were sending the message after the flood wave had passed. And
saying the flood is coming.
And people, okay. And it was saying the flood is coming.
Self-injury.
So people were flooded, and they're thinking, oh my gosh, what's going to happen now? Because we already got flooded. And so it was...
So it was suboptimal.
Pretty much
suboptimal.
A disaster. Yes.
The point about that was the Lynn's call to OEM happened in plenty of time.
Yeah, and that's...
It
yeah.
was actually once OEM called reverse 911 that their system crashed because of all the flaws in the data.
Okay.
And the call actually went out 45 minutes after we contacted them and said send it. So now my alerts is a whole new vendor, a whole new system.
So,
and OEM, they actually pushed the button. They want us to push the button. We're still hesitant about it.
But it's real time. Okay, so it's 12,000 feet. So 12,000 CFS as of this moment. I get the
right,
little message from the gauge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the sensor.
So the sensor is about is upstream of the area of concern. So we know we have time built in.
Okay,
the location
time built
in.
So how long will it take to get to homeowner in danger?
Okay, so there's a couple of things going on there, and I'm going to back you up in the time scale a little bit, because when the gauge hits 12,000, that doesn't mean that we weren't paying attention before it hits 12,000. So basically, when these washes that we're doing this on, when they start to flow, when they start to come up, there's alerts happening that are
just to us
within the assistant.
At 3 o'clock in the morning.
3 o'clock in the morning, we get texts. My phone, smartphone started going off.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
And so basically, as the waters are rising, primarily Lynn Orchard, but there's backups to him if he's unavailable, they're watching the water rise. And so before it even hits 12,000, he's most likely on the phone with OEM saying, hey, waters are rising, we might have to kick something in here. And so he's going to say, okay, you know what, I warned you that we might have to send out a message. Now I'm calling you, send the message. Within minutes, basically, the OEM people can log into the system from anywhere. No, somebody doesn't have to be at the emergency operations center to trigger these things. They can log in from anything. And then they can send the message, and basically the message goes out. So within minutes...
Okay. We're already pre-typed, so it's just send.
Yeah, so within minutes we can send the message. Now, how much lead time the actual person has is going to vary tremendously on which watershed they're in. So in Cañada del Oro, they'll actually have a fair amount of lead time because our gauge is a ways upstream, and we can monitor the flows coming from quite a ways upstream. If they're in Pima Canyon Wash, not much time because our gauge isn't that far up, and you're talking about maybe 15, 20, 30 minutes potentially, depending on where they are within the watershed. If they're really high, they're going to get less lead time.
Yeah.
If you're on the Santa Cruz and you're at the bottom of the inundation mapping, you're going to have a couple hours at least, probably. How much time people have to actually react and prepare is going to vary tremendously.
But it sounds like it's much better than the alternative.
Exactly.
And that's forward.
And we definitely, we understand that this is not a perfect system. There is no such thing as perfect flood warning. And in fact, actually the 2010 is a good example. The gauge hit, in the 2010 event, the gauge at Tanqueray Guest Ranch actually hit 21,000 and change CFS. That was going to be a flood that was going to be fairly monumental for the 49ers subdivision. There's going to be a lot of people flooded. But the storm event was a monsoonal event, and it was a very short duration. So it was a very peaky flood without a lot of volume in it. So that by the time that 21,000 at the gauge got down to 49ers subdivision, it was only about 12,000 CFS. And so certainly people flooded in 49ers. We had probably about a dozen or so homes flooded during that event. But if that 21,000 had come through, it would have been probably three times that many, at least, if not a lot more. We haven't sent out the public notifications to sign up for this system yet, but we are telegraphing to people who are going to be getting these messages. This is not perfect. We may warn you, and what happened in 2010 happens, and you know what, a big plug of water comes in, and then it just kind of dissipates, and it's not as bad as you think. Or maybe it's going to be worse.
The flood map's also a snapshot attempt. During a flood, the river meanders. Lots of things happen during a flood.
It's
a prediction, we're going to give it our best shot.
And it changes. So we understand this is not a perfect system, but... Basically, it's better than nothing,
yep.
And it gives people at least a chance to know that it's coming, and I think almost maybe as importantly, it gives us a chance to tell people who are in these areas where we know it's going to flood and it's going to be fairly frequent. It gives us a chance to send them messages that are targeted to them to say, be prepared ahead of time. You know, create your emergency response plan. Have emergency kits. Know your routes. Know whether you're going to shelter in place, whether you're going to try to find high ground. It gives us a chance to target these specific individuals who are in these high-risk locations so they can prepare ahead of time and know what to do.
So these gauges are the same gauges you were talking about two slides ago.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Except I think those were rain gauges. So
yeah.
So
there was a stream gauge in there too.
It was our stream gauge. So basically, this is using. Currently, we're only using stream gauge data for the My Alert system. One thing we potentially can do in the future. We can only put stream gauges. Stream gauges don't work everywhere. You have to kind of have a certain set of conditions to make a good stream gauge site that's going to be reliable. It needs to be someplace where the channel geometry is going to be fairly constant, because if it's someplace that's going to erode and change volume, it's not a good site for a gauge, because if it erodes and now the gauge might say it's only a foot deep, when in fact, it's actually really wide, and there's a lot of water, and then the next down, further downstream, now you've got a huge problem. And so there are some gauge places, there's some watersheds we will probably never be able to gauge and have a really good handle on for this system. But you know, we have kind of put some thought for the future of maybe using our rain gauges as a proxy. It will be even more kind of dicey in terms of accuracy, but it is a place where if someone, you know, if we've got a lot of folks in harm's way, it's better than nothing. We can say, hey, we've had 3 inches of rain in an hour at this gauge. We expect flooding. Please be on the lookout. Please be warned.
Sandbag up your door.
Yeah. And so, you know, just as we're adding gauges into Oral Valley, you know, we've given Lynn kind of the reins to add a bunch of gauges throughout Pima County, and so we expect to be getting more and more data, and so it kind of increases the our opportunity to expand the system.
So it doesn't sound like right now that there's any place in Oral Valley that would necessarily be covered by this.
Correct. So, I mean, the nice thing about Oral Valley is you're protected by bank protection and levees. And so the inundation maps wouldn't necessarily be all that exciting because everything's in channel.
Yeah.
And we don't have stream gauges. We have stream gauge at the Big Wash, but there isn't really anybody in the Big Wash either.
Isn't there stream gauge at Oracle and CDO?
Yeah.
Oracle at the CDO.
Yeah. And
so
and
there's the Oasis area that would have some people, but otherwise I think it's mostly inside a channel.
I'm thinking about Highlands, I guess, but there's no...
We don't have no stream gauge there yet.
Yeah, right.
But it's
but that's certainly a conversation that we can have of, hey, this would be a great place to put a stream gauge because we want to be able to warn these people. And so that's part of the reason for bringing this to you, to the commission, so you guys can think about how you might want to tie into the system.
And Chair DeSantis, make a note that kind of follows in with Greg's floodplain management plan, that this is a problem that you all are familiar with, Highlands Wash, needing some sort of advance warning. That could be a problem hazard in his assessment.
And tied into the floodplain management plan, that's the kind of thing we want communities to tell us, right? Things we need to be doing. But then also, to put this in the context of, I know you have interest in this, your own CRS rating as well, and that's part of this, like the floodplain management plan, is also a foot in the door for CRS plans. Up until the 2007 manual revision, you had to provide 24-hour warning, so none of the communities in the West could get those points, and we made it a national
How would you get 24-hour
points? Yeah, right. So that's, you know, it's the federal program
for tornado. I mean,
they precluded pretty much all Western jurisdictions from getting any points in it or being able to become a class.
Yeah,
they wrote it on the East Coast, it applies on the East Coast.
Yeah, that's right.
For a long time, they said there had to be 3 inundation levels, and there had to be 24-hour warning, and we had one Arizona Association of Floodplain Managers submitted, you know, these letters and got the manual changed so that one, it can be, doesn't have to be 24-hour, 2, it doesn't really have to be 3 levels, it just have to be areas. So it could be floodplain, it could be old town. And then, you know, my alerts are being advertised as an opt-in system, which that's really what it is, but, you know, the police can't actually call any cell phone in an area should they identify the need to, and this is kind of a precursor to that. So when you brought up the CDO, it doesn't make me think that, you know, this is a way that people are walking in these areas. So it's not just for places you live, you could just be driving through or have it on your commute route or your bicycle or your running route or your hiking route or your equestrian route and want to get warnings at the place that keep the horses.
And the Everbridge system, the MyAlert system, can also tap into reverse 911. So we can tap into the 911 system and push those out. It's just that we know that the data is not very good and not very trustworthy, and therefore we're not going to rely on it to hit everybody who's in the watershed. And I think 911 data is only going to get worse as fewer people have landlines and more people have cell phones, because that's, I think, one of the big gaps in the 911 data right now is people who also who don't have landlines anymore.
They have to be careful about the different rules of syndrome. This OEM is not going to force a call to cell phones.
Because we are sending basically with the different alerts, kind of the philosophy that we're taking with it is we're trying to notify essentially one inundation area ahead of where the flood is now. So,
is this the right place?
So if we have an inundation level of 875 CFS, we're going to notify the folks who are in the 5,000 CFS inundation area so that we give them a bigger lead time in order to prepare. So we're saying, hey, it's hit here, it's still rising.
Just based on modeling.
Based on modeling, yeah.
Chair DeSanto.
Just real quick, also kind of related to CRS, this is also a prerequisite to becoming a Class 4 community, so it kind of ties in with the floodplain management plan in that respect as well. And then if we didn't do something, even if we didn't do this or something like this, the county would not be able to go beyond a Class 5 community. I cut somebody off.
And I would just also like to make a note that homeowners aren't just looking at this. First responders are taking a look at this as well. So where are the flooded roads? Where do we need to close the road down during a storm event? What bridges could be impacted? What roads are inaccessible during the floods?
And we're going to be basically putting into the system two parallel messages with this. So there's going to be a public message, and then there's going to be an agency message. So we'll actually be able to push messages out through my alerts to the sheriff's department, fire department, and it'll be, hey, this gate just hit this amount. There's probably, this road is going to be impassable. That road is going to be impassable. There's going to be flooded homes in this subdivision. And so we can actually give more detail to first responders so that they know, oh, you know what, we need to send a squad car over here, or we need to send fire over here. And so we can have separate messages that go out to the public versus what goes out to other government agencies, and it helps them respond in a better manner.
Commissioner, question. So who, if you co-locate in an area in Oro Valley, who's responsible for monitoring it?
We do all the monitoring, yeah.
And is the MyAlert system, I think Commissioner Kifari was sort of telling us about it on the last field trip, but is it an app?
So, no. So it's just a website that you go to and you sign up. I'm sure you can sign up on your phone too, but it's not an app. It sends you a text or it sends you a voicemail. And it's an automated, I think it's like a text reader, so it's not like it's a person's voice. I think it's like a automated text reader that would give you a voicemail. Like if you didn't answer the phone, it would leave you a message on your voicemail. But it's all automated through the phone system, so there's no app for it specifically. So Alert, there is an app for Alert, which is our entire gauge network. So that includes both rain gauges and stream gauges. But that doesn't actually... like you can see what the real values are in real time, but it doesn't say, hey, it doesn't like give you an audio tone or anything like that to say, hey, a gauge has gone ballistic. Although the app does,
It
does have different symbology so that it'll change color. So like if a really intense rainfall is at one specific rain gauge, the icon for that rain gauge will change color from green to yellow to red.
It doesn't reach out to you to tell you that.
You have to go and look, but it will tell you, like, hey, there's a lot of rain happening at this particular gauge site or stream gauge.
It is a little unfortunate that our long-standing rain and stream gauge system called Alert is very close to my alerts. That has been very confusing, but it is what it is.
We had no control over what OEM called it. So, trying to think if there's anything else. Any questions at this point?
No. Could you give us your name again, please?
Brian Jones.
Brian?
Yes.
Thank you.
But, you know, you hit the nail on the head. So, you know, this, the whole, we have forever called our rain, fall, and stream gauge information flood threat recognition and not flood warning, because it's very difficult to do flood warning because the speed of the floods coming out of our very steep topography. Floods come fast. And only as incrementally our information gets better, our rainfall information, our stream gauge information is real time. So if someone's watching, that's real time. That's the RT in alert. It's an acronym. I don't remember all the other letters.
Automated local evaluation, real time.
There it is. And so, you know, as we're able to speed up the information and decisions, we're getting to a level of comfort where it is worth it to attempt flood warning.
When will you go live?
So we're currently, we're basically, we've kind of pushed this to our legal folks to try to make sure that they're on board with the messaging that we're, like, we're not really asking, like, are you okay with the system? It's just like, here's what we're saying to people. Are you okay with it? I think our expectation is a little bit out of our control, but the expectation is that probably within a month or so that we'll be sending out the public notifications to residents.
It would have been better to do it just before monsoon, but
It happens.
It's
going to
rain someday.
And that's the prescriptive message component. I mean, my alert is live. We have the 24/7, 24/365 days a year operator, just like we do, who talk to each other, and we can, you know, Brian can script a message on the fly or on the information officer if necessary. So we have draft, you know, the drafts that went to the lawyers are actually in the system.
They're in the, yeah.
It's just
And the reality right now is, you know, I think in the Office of Emergency Management has indicated to us that they have not been excited about the number of subscribers that they've gotten to the system. So, like, it's not really being used by the public very much. And they're actually very interested, because we're going to be doing very targeted, like, hey, there's a threat that's you're in, and, you know, it's going to be very kind of sternly worded, not sternly worded, but kind of very focused wording of there's a threat that we can warn you about. And OEM has actually indicated they're very interested to see how much that impacts how many people sign up for the system, because I think they've been underwhelmed by the level of interest that the public has shown to this point.
How will you get that information out in a targeted manner?
So we're basically, we're using the inundation area polygons, and we're intersecting that in our GIS with the parcel base. And in fact, actually, one of the reasons why it's gotten delayed, we did intend on getting this out prior to monsoon, but one of the technical difficulties that we had is we actually did a test on the system. You know, in our GIS data, parcel address information is the centroid of the parcel. That is not the case of the data that's in Everbridge. So basically, we created a polygon. We signed up for some addresses within that. We sent out a test alert, and only one of the addresses we put in the system actually got notified. And that's because the data that's in Everbridge, they're using phone data, and a lot of that is addressing at the street instead of within the parcel. And so our polygon, even though it may have gone through half of the parcel, the point that Everbridge was saying is out here at the street and not where the house is. And so we actually had to take all of our inundation polygons and basically select the parcel base based on the inundation polygon. So if you looked at the actual, you know, these are nice curvilinear lines. If you look at what's actually in Everbridge, it's going to be chunk, 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 chunk. It's going to be following parcel boundaries instead of the actual where the water is. And that's something we had to do. And then, because sometimes, you know, here's a huge parcel that may only clip the floodplain, we had to then go in and manually go through all of the parcel data around the outside of those and remove parcels that we're like, these people are not going to care because it's a 50-acre parcel and it nicks the bottom 5 feet. You know, these people are not going to be concerned about this. And so that took a considerable amount of effort on our part to make sure that the people who we want to notify, and if they put their address in the system, they will get notified. Because, you know, our biggest concern is if somebody's indicated they want to be notified, we need to make sure that if something happens, they do. And so one of the things that we'll be doing on the back end is once we do this public outreach push, we're going to remain in conversation with the OEM folks and have them, like, okay, here's the people who signed up, making sure that that they will be getting the message that they're within the polygon that we've created based on the parcel base, to make sure that, yes, when this happens, they will be in the system to give that message. So we'll be ground truthing and back checking on the back end, pulling from the Everbridge data from sign-ups to make sure that folks are getting the message.
It's a letter to every property owner.
We're sending out a letter. The letter's going to include kind of just general, like, how we got here, and then there's going to be a fact sheet. So each watershed has a fact sheet. We're actually also letting them know the message that they're going to get ahead of time, so they know what to expect when they, like, when they get the message. It's like they already have read it, they already know what it means. And then we're going to send them a thing about how to make an emergency response plan as well. So
okay. Well, thank you.
I know we can talk about this for a long time. I have one quick question. We'll be talking about the Carmack wash study, one of the next topics, and we're looks like they're putting a couple of gauges in the Carmack area, with some luck. Would there be a time when the homes that are inundated in the Carmack be able to be notified through this Everbridge process using rainfall data, or maybe we should put a gauge on Carmack at Kai Concordia or something?
Yeah, I mean,
Is that something you can help us with?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're certainly interested in expanding this. The 10 places that we chose were chosen primarily because of the data that we already had and the gauges that we already have. But certainly, you know, we're interested in expanding this to other gauges, or like maybe we just don't have all the inundation levels, and we need to do a study to figure out, okay, what discharge is important for us to warn people at, and we just don't have that information. Mm-hmm. Certainly, as we gain that information, as we put more rain gauges in or rain flow gauges in, we do want to expand this. This is just kind of our initial effort to kind of get our foot in the door and get the system mm-hmm. up and running. But certainly, we don't plan on stopping here.
Okay, thank you.
So we worked out the technical kinks, and now we're notifying our elected officials so they can brace for, hey, we're going to send out many thousands of letters to folks, and when they get calls, this is why in the background. So that's where we are. And so it's over the span of a few weeks, a month, that it'll hit the streets.
Thank you.
All right. So then I have North Ranch Wash Floodplain Mapping Study status, which I think that there are some. So, you know, I think, you know, we have a... Yes. Yeah. Right.
That's a good one.
But those are good. So this is the change of the. So, you know, we're at a point where we think that we could approach FEMA with a letter of map revision. So we have the existing FEMA floodplain, a zone A approximate floodplain, which is the yellow polygon. And then we have the more precise proposed FEMA AE zone. The AE zone means we have water surface elevation zone, and we go from a general approximate mass, a best guess, to actually using hydrology and hydraulic information to more precisely look at the floodplain. And so we're at the step where we would recommend that we submit to FEMA, being that this was the town's request. We'd be looking for the town to be, you know, signatory on the application as the community to you know, agree with that, and we would submit it to FEMA. We think that the bright side of getting the accurate information in this particular case is that we get to remove a lot of folks from the FEMA floodplain. So again, it was not that accurate. There's a lot of folks who are likely paying flood insurance if they have a federally backed mortgage that when we look more precisely probably don't need to. And so that, you know, this is a good news story. And I think that we're is, I have some numbers around here. We have 15 structures in the town of Oro Valley get removed from the FEMA A zone, and we add three structures into the AE zone. So, I mean, there are folks who will not appreciate the study, notwithstanding the fact that they're going to be flood prone. I mean, they're flood prone. So, you know, the way that we soften the blow for in that regard is the way that the FEMA process works, is that if you get flood insurance before you're mapped into a FEMA floodplain, you can get flood insurance. That's called the preferred risk policy. It is generally pennies on the dollar with respect to, as compared to getting flood insurance if you're in the FEMA special flood hazard area. And if you have that flood insurance prior to being mapped in, you can hold on to that for a while. And so it kind of, you know, softens the blow. But there are, you know, there's 15 folks in the town of Oro that are maybe paying it now that wouldn't have to. And so that's always a little bit of a tough call. But when we do our own floodplain mapping in unincorporated Pima County, there's a political aspect to it. And generally speaking, when we have a net benefit overall, you know, we pursue it, and then it ends up in the grand scheme being beneficial. So that's our recommendation, is to the town to pursue that. We're at that the level where we can do that. There is also some additional local floodplain mapping. So FEMA really likes the larger water courses and not all the little tributaries and small flows. And so there, the regulatory tool that Oro Valley could use is a little bit bigger than just the FEMA map, and we would recommend that they use the local floodplains, the tributaries, as best available data for regulatory purposes, but there is not a flood insurance implication, other than we would always recommend getting flood insurance, and then they get to keep that preferred risk policy. Any questions on that?
Did you say what the date was on the existing FEMA A? When was that?
That's a good question. I don't know, but I would guess all these old A zones are usually from the 80s. I don't know. Do you have an idea? You're using the maps.
Yeah, about the 80s.
Usually 83 or 89.
It's also kind of interesting to point out that, you know, in an A zones are the most expensive special flood hazard area for flood insurance, because basically FEMA said, hey, there's a floodplain, but we don't know how deep or how bad it is. And
we'll assume bad.
So there's an unknown risk, which, of course, insurance people don't like unknown risks, and so the rate is a lot higher. So we're taking people out of a very expensive floodplain, and even the folks are in the AE zone. Now, because we've established a water surface elevation, they actually may be able to show their house is elevated at or above the BFE. So even if they are getting put into the floodplain, their insurance may not be that bad, because there's a chance that they actually have some elevation and the floor is dry.
All right. The next one would be the Carmack Wash. And so I don't think we provided data. So, you know, we have some proposed floodplains, but we don't have a notebook that supports those. And I think that there's a joint responsibility here between the county and the Oro Valley to take a look at those floodplain maps and provide written comments, so that, you know, we can have the next iteration. And after that iteration, we create what's called the technical data notebook, the TDN, which is the background for the floodplain. And I'll assume, you know, that the Carmack would be a situation where there's going to be a lot of folks that are going to be exposed to flood hazards, that are exposed, that we're identifying the flood risk, and will likely be implemented as a locally identified floodplain. But that decision hasn't been made and doesn't need to be made yet. But so there are floodplains out there. I think you guys have them. And I think we're looking for, you know, some comments back, and we can compile them all and have one more iteration before they get adopted.
I don't believe we haven't received them yet.
You don't have the floodplain maps?
For Carmack?
For Carmack.
For this latest? No, sir.
Yeah, all right. I can make sure that you have them.
But they will be shortly, I've been told.
Okay. So I have a version, but I can make sure that you have the version that I have.
Thank you.
Very good. And the final one is Highland Wash, which is still we've only really just started. We're going to create existing conditions and then work on, you know, some level of design to try to address the pair of issues. One related to the manufactured home park that's mm-hmm. at the bottom of the Highland Wash, as well as the infrastructure south of Lambert, I believe, before it enters the CDL. So first step always is to figure out what your existing conditions is, and then you start doing some design iterations to figure out what an optimal solution is, or a set of solutions that can be subject to discussion. And when we get to that point, we can come back here, or, you know, again, that would be up to you guys about whether or not we talk about potential design solutions or what, you know, here.
I'm sorry, I'm still a little unclear. So where are you in the process of floodplain, of proposed floodplain mapping for that area?
For Highland Wash? Early. So I think it's very early. I think the contract is fairly started. I know I haven't seen any floodplain maps. Have you guys seen anything from Arroyo?
No, I've been told that they have maps, and
I don't think we've seen them either.
We haven't seen them,
so we're waiting on the consultant.
Within a month or so, we should get them.
That's that.
For existing conditions.
Okay. Any questions regarding that? I think that was my list. Are there other questions? Yeah, while we're here.
Well, thanks.
Need more coffee?
Well, thank you very much for that very thorough discussion.
Sure.
We're very appreciative of it, especially interested in these My Alert system. And we'll have to figure out what makes sense if we can do something on our own. How much does one of those stream gauges cost?
A stream gauge? They're not. Yeah, I bet they're in the same. They're, you know, not.
Okay.
That, you know, it's a conduit with a pressure transducer, so mm-hmm. they're not very complicated.
Okay.
They take a lot of maintenance. That's what it is.
Yeah,
so.
It's really communications.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's certainly possibilities and interest in expanding that.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know is everyone familiar with the alert system? Our, you know.
We can bring that up in one of these meetings and discuss that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So yeah, we can maybe set that up for next meeting.
Sure.
I can do a presentation on it.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you.
And if you guys would like to,
you're welcome to stay if you want. If you want to stay,
I'll take the opportunity to scoot.
I know Eric needs to get with the town engineer and then before he leaves.
Am I just going through that?
Yeah. Just do that.
I'll come with you.
Yeah.
For a
second.
Good. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, the next agenda item. Discussion of stormwater meetings and events.
That's me. In your packet, we have a list of perhaps a dozen or more upcoming events. Primarily, they're the flood control district meetings that we have every month. There's been an interest voiced in the past by commissioners say they would like to perhaps attend one of these meetings. So here they are. They generally coincide with the Wednesday before our meeting. Sometimes they're a little bit off. But anyway, there's the flood control district meetings, our meetings. And then we have three items at the end of this list of calendars. There's some training on the National Flood Insurance Program. That'll be at the end of August. And then in September, we have our annual report for our MS4. That is due, and Scott Bennett here on my right will be putting that annual report together. If you recall, we showed the commissioners the new database, so the new format for reporting purposes.
That's all online, if I remember correctly. Now.
That is
correct.
It's
not going to be a hard copy.
I think we gave you a paper copy or PDF or something, but we'll be filling that form out in the next month or so.
Are you on September 30th?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
And if the commissioners would like to see a draft copy, I'm fairly sure we can give it to you in advance. It might be an early draft. Given our schedule, but you're welcome to look at it. We know from our past presentations that we are up to date on all of the items that we said we would do or are required to do. So I'm confident we'll have a clean report.
Does anyone want to see an advanced copy? Because I just want to make people do work if they don't have to. I'm guessing no, so that'll be fine. We don't need an advanced copy.
Okay. We'll give you a copy as it goes in.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. And then I marked at the bottom of the list, just mostly for our internal purposes, we're expecting a community assistance visit from the Arizona Department of Water Resources. This is the NFIP, the flood insurance side of the state regulatory body. We will be audited sometime this year. We should know in August when that is. For planning purposes, I put it down for October 1st, so it's something we will be prepared for, preparing for, and we'll keep you apprised of that activity. Our last one was 4 or 5 years ago. Mike, do you recall offhand when
it was 2014, I think it was February 2014.
14. And what does an audit like that consist of, briefly?
They look at the BMPs that we have declared that we are going to do.
ADWR, not ADEQ.
No, that's true.
So
this one is the CRS system more than.
Well, that we're not part of the CRS.
No,
we're not. They will be making sure we are administering the floodplain regulations. Are you issuing floodplain use permits for those instances where there's development within a federally identified floodplain or a locally administered floodplain, like our new Carmack Lodge, for example? Are we making sure through our development process, are we identifying the homes that are in washes or new development? Are we ensuring that the homes are either out of the floodplain or protected safely above? Do we get elevation certificates? Are we following the rules? Do we have procedures in place? Do we have a standard operating procedure that lists how our front counter staff initially identifies flood-prone properties and so make sure that the information is given to us early on by the applicant so they can make the necessary changes? So they're going to be looking at our entire process and then our records. So look at first at our process and then the records showing that we have been following that over the last 4 years.
So the August training will help? Feed right into that? I mean, that's good timing to go to the August.
Yes, and that's also going to help us rewrite our flood insurance, floodplain management ordinance.
Right.
If we're in the process of identifying areas that should be adjusted, and this will just make us better prepared for that. So yes, it'll help us in both regards. The rewrite of the floodplain management ordinance and preparing us for the audit. We'll know the rules as best we can.
I think that original audit was the summer of 2012. Right? So it was a couple years before we got in here. So.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were responding to those comments when Justin started. So we still hadn't, the utility hadn't gotten around to responding.
That was the last audit, you say, was
that was the last
2012.
Audit. And then we responded when Justin got on board. We responded to those and ended up with a couple more that
like action items or
action items.
And specifically, if I may, specifically a rewrite of our floodplain management ordinance. It was before you came on, Commissioner Brown. We updated the our floodplain management ordinance to identify only those items that were found to be deficient. With and the thought at that time was to get out from under the audit and then to rewrite the ordinance, perhaps in total, at a future date, and that future date is coming up. So that's our work list, our list of meetings and events. Are there any questions?
Good.
That's it.
Number four, review and discussion of status of ongoing FEMA grant applications. That should be a quick one. We haven't heard yet from about Catalina Ridge.
Actually,
on the contrary.
Oh, I'm contrary.
So we do have a report. It's report number four. And we're going to be letting you know about two of our grant applications. If you recall from last month's report, we told you of five active applications out. We've heard on two of them. And we heard just recently that our Catalina Ridge grant application has been, I don't want to use the word denied, but it was found to be did not meet HMA requirements.
Okay.
And we were, at the time this report was written, we had not heard from FEMA regarding their review comments, and we're still working on that right now. So
that may be because it was the cost benefit was very close, right? If I remember correctly, the cost benefit was almost 1-to-1.
Mm-hmm.
It was very close. Mm-hmm.
We were told at that time that we were number 10 on the list,
mm-hmm.
of, and the first nine are the ones that are selected.
Well, they'll always tell you that.
All right.
Yeah, everyone's going to tell you.
Stay,
you know, I don't worry about that.
Right.
If you were number five, the first four make it.
So. Right. So if somebody drops out, then we might ascend to back on the list. So we'll see on that one. So that one, that's...
Well, before we leave that one, so let's assume that it's denied. So we have Highlands Wash that's coming up that we've already had the notice of intent. Do we have to issue a notice of intent to resubmit this, so make it another two-year, a notice of intent again if we want to resubmit it to go back year after next? Or how does that sequence with Highland Wash? Because we have notice of intent for the application for next year. I realize this is all government speak, and I don't understand it very much, so I'm just trying to make best sense of it.
There's no connection between Highland and Catalina Ridge.
Okay.
We can submit as many applications as we have resources to do
it. Do we have to do an NOI on this again, or do we have to? Can we just resubmit?
I think we'd have to do an NOI for another round of funding.
Okay.
An NOI is a notice of intent is submitted for a specific funding period.
So essentially, this is now pushed back a couple of years.
We don't know that. We can actually still submit. We have some corrections that they said that we could do. If we have them in within the next month for Catalina Ridge,
mm-hmm.
we can still possibly fit into the rankings, the top four. Nine, whatever it might be.
Yeah. N minus one.
Yes.
So, or N plus one.
So there still is that opportunity.
Be N minus one.
And then, yes, if we do not fall into that, then we will definitely have to put an NOI in for the next year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it depends on how much more effort or whether or not the benefit-cost ratio an impediment that we can't overcome. We don't know yet. So it would have to be evaluated.
Okay.
And then we'll report back to you as soon as that happens. Then
go ahead. Let's do the second one. Then I have a question about Catalina Ridge. But
let's finish Catalina Ridge.
What happens to the neighborhood? So what do we tell the and we have somebody from the neighborhood here, but what would be the message to the neighborhood if it is denied and now we have a sequence of, worst case, a two-year sequence? Is there any proximate danger of significant issues over the course of the next 2 years? Is there anything really to be concerned about for the next 2 years? Or?
Well, there's, in terms of flood risk, that happens every day.
I'm thinking of that channel, because the channel's already collapsed. Part of it has already collapsed once. Yeah. I mean, is there any...
And the risk of that happening again is still a 1% chance every year, or it could be multiple times. A 10-year flood will cause the damage. Okay. So the risk is always there. It's that it's a hazard.
Okay.
At this point, I don't think staff, at least at my level, are prepared to explain or tell the residents what our plans are, because I don't think they exist at this point. But
right.
But they might be. And at this point, all we can safely say is that we received notice that it did not meet requirements, that we can turn in some additional information within the next 30 days, and if somebody else drops out, there's a chance it will be moved up.
Right.
But that's all the information we have at this time.
So the cost-benefit ratio, did they accept what staff submitted, or did they then recalculate it, or did they come up with their own number?
I don't know.
They accepted.
We don't believe that was the major problem with it. They asked for other things besides us reworking that. So we have other things that can be done that are more along the lines of what Justin does anyway. So they just didn't ask for it on the previous submittal, so it kind of just lingered until now.
And we've asked whether we could speak to the reviewers, and we're told no, that was not possible. So we've tried to ascertain what portions of the application were acceptable and which ones were weak. We were looking for some guidance, and we were denied that opportunity, unfortunately.
Well, one silver lining sounds to be now we know that for Highlands Wash, for the actual submittal, that there's these other things that they'll probably be looking for. Mm-hmm. So at least that one has. Yeah.
Right, right.
That we may not get into a do loop for that one.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think what I intend to do is just pass a copy of what's in the write-up to our president of the HOA.
Sure.
I mean, there's interest in it, and it's dragged out several months. You know, originally we were talking about April, May, just hearing back. So I think what I'm going to do is, after the meeting, put together an email to them and just pass that information along.
Yeah. And Commissioner said that's this item one in the report is what we know.
Yeah, and that's that's fine, and that's an update.
Sure.
Yeah.
And we pass this along as we received the information on June 24th. This is the first opportunity to report back to you.
Okay.
So we've had. So this is fresh, as it were.
All right. That's number one.
And on July 1st, we received good news that our grant application for repairs to Lambert Lane dip crossing had been selected for further consideration, and there was a meeting this last week, and it looks like there is a good chance that we will receive funding in the amount of $220,000 for the project. It requires a 25% contribution by the town or a second party contribution
for the county, if we can. Give them more cookies
and take those home with you. So that's excellent news.
Yeah.
So right now we are preparing bid packages for contractors, so we'll have a competitive bid.
If I remember correctly, we had some money in the budget for that. We had the 50,000 or 60,000 or whatever the 25% was somewhere in there. Remember that, in addition to the 220.
Commissioner DeSantis, the interesting thing about this, A, is one, it's the first grant. that we've received since the new rate and getting staff on board. Secondly, we had this budgeted because we thought we'd have to bear the brunt and we wanted to preserve the roadway asset. I think you guys, they turned this around, the grant opportunity arose. We had 48 hours, I'm taking credit, to turn the grant application around. So for the 2 days, these guys worked to get the material, get it in, and lo and behold, we're $220,000 to the good.
Goodness on that. Yeah. Great job. Yeah. That's wonderful news.
So it speaks to the professional efforts by Scott and John primarily. Yes, there was others of us who participated in burned midnight oil. But as Amy pointed out, it was also the forethought of our administration with full support of the commission to request and be granted a rate increase that allowed our positions to be filled and give us the opportunity to go after these grants. This is the first time in 3 years we've had these positions for the first time. We've gotten a grant, but we've been going after them. Not only have we gotten grant money, we also have a spreadsheet somewhere that we presented to Suzanne Shields, the director of the Flood Control District, last week, showing her the monies that we had received in the last 3 years from the district for CIP related work, for cleaning out washes, for drainage studies, and it was a substantial amount. I'm afraid to tell you what those numbers are, but they were significant. But the point being, thank you, commissioners, thank you, administration, for your forethought on increasing our budget for this one purpose, to be a better program, and it's now paying off. Okay. And so thank you all.
Outstanding.
So that's it. So we have, we're working towards getting some competitive bids from contractors to build the facility, and then we should be completed by, I think, October or November, this calendar year. It needs to be spent within one 365 day year from the date of the award. So we'll be able to meet that.
Mm-hmm. Considered a shovel ready project.
Exactly. It is. That's what they want.
Yeah. Shovel ready. Yeah. Like,
and yes, we had it shovel ready because we did the survey. We did the land surveying. We had topographic maps. We had maps showing the utility conflicts for both the west and the east dip crossings on Lambert Lane over here. So we had an idea that we needed to fix it, and we had these shovel ready plans. And
so has the message gone to the current city council or commission that it's too bad Councilmember Jones Ivy isn't here, because I think she's quite an advocate, but I just think it's very good information for them.
Sure, DeSantis, Commissioner Brown, one of the things that the grant is requiring us to do is update our agent authorization person, which is the town manager. So on July 31st, it is an agenda item, we had to put a report together, so they will be, it will come forward that way.
Terrific.
So, very important.
All right.
Thank you.
Discussion of possible action regarding cancellation of the August 15th stormwater meeting. I think we should. I would cancel it. I would. I know typically. I know because in years past we've canceled. Last year we didn't.
Right. That's...
But in previous years we had canceled it because, and I think that mirrors the Pima County one as well.
Correct.
Typically, this group meets around 10 times a year, not in August and not typically in December. So is there any objection to canceling it?
Does the Stormwater Department have anything pressing that they would need action taken by the commission on?
May I at least offer our preference, my preference, is that we do have a month away. It coincides with our summer rainy season. We are going to be working extra hard out in the field, addressing the problems.
Yeah.
And I know that it takes about 20% of our staff's time to put these meetings together and keep information coming towards you. It's 20% of our budget is doing it. I'm not sure if it's quite, I know it's my time and Urena's and Scott's and everybody, but there's a lot of time spent, and we could use it for drainage stuff.
Yes, all right, yeah. I think. So we will cancel.
Do we have a second?
We'll
I'll second.
Okay.
Is there a motion?
Mr. Cafari made a motion. Mr. Stinnett
second.
Seconded it.
Agreed.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Oh, there's one thing I would ask for, is that at the September meeting, if you have any photos or videos of stormwater events, you know, as you're doing it, we'd love to see them. I thought that was great last fall when we met again. It was wonderful to actually see it, to actually see the work in how it looks, you know, because as much fun as the South, we don't go rushing to, you know, we don't go rushing to Overton to watch the water flow by.
Okay.
Chair DeSantis and commissioners probably put together two reports, both on the Lambert Lane Phase 1 completion and the El Conquistador erosion completion, and bring some of those photos back within that report. It actually looks really nice projects.
It probably won't have started. The Lambert Lane won't have started by then.
Lambert Lane 1 is completed.
Lambert Lane 1 is completed. Yeah, driven past it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so nice, you know. And I pointed to my wife, see, that's what we did. She says, what happened? I said, don't worry about it. Take my word for it, there's a lot of stuff.
Is that an agenda item?
It'll be on the meeting and events. So stormwater issue will be an event. So there'll be events.
Commissioners, that I might mention, the way this new system works, you request a report for us, the report itself becomes the agenda item. Literally, the topic is the report. So if we come back with a report, it will be an agenda item.
So we're getting away from A, B, C, D.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. That is absolutely fine.
I can do I would like to do a presentation on the, on our alert gauges, on the interface of it, how to look at the data on the web and on the phones, if you guys are interested.
So let's as we go through, now we're at future agenda items. So it'll be the same, number one, reviewing the minutes. Number two will be replaced. It'll be the discussion of stormwater meeting and events. In other words, it just shifts up, right? Because number two goes away.
Well, what I'm thinking was, didn't council member...
Because I like the alert system. You wanted to talk about the alert system. And so I was thinking it just...
We have to get the town council. We have to get Councilwoman Jordan.
That's what I was thinking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, we don't need the number. That's fine.
Okay. So then two comes the stormwater meeting events. Then I think let's do number three will be...
alert
system, as well as, well, we wanted to talk about the alert system anyway, so I know that Mr. Todden brought that up. We'll talk about the alert system.
And maybe include the National Weather Service radar imagery as well. Just throw that in.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we go to, what did we just do? Number four, will the FEMA grant applications, because that'll be something the Waynes will talk about, because by then, 60 days will it be gone. Maybe we'll get some extra feedback on Catalina Ridge. And number five, I saw that we didn't have financials on this one, so I'm wondering if in this new system we would still look at financials.
Commissioners, yes, but if we have nothing to report,
exactly,
it
that's
doesn't
fine.
Create a report, it doesn't become a
I understand, that's fine. So let's just have a placeholder for financials. for now, and then if it disappears, it disappears. We may not have year-end financials anyway by September. If I remember correctly, it was like November last year before we got them. It was almost 2 years later before we got the last year. So
we can have some type of draft and some type of...
No, we can't. We can't have it unless council's seeing it, right?
Right.
So only if council's seeing it can we see it.
Last, they did see May, so we are through May, so we can...
Right, but yeah. I think, so... I'm less concerned about that.
If you can, we
will. If you can, you will, and that is it. And now we're at the point of possible adjournment. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Councilmember Brown made a motion to adjourn. Any second?
I second it.
Mr. Sinnett, second it. We are going to be adjourned. Thank you, everybody, and see you in 2 months. Have a wonderful time with us not draining, with us not being your overhead.